How about some true stories of ghosts, angels, and spirits of the dead manifesting in the physical plane? What's checking in with John Russell in a moment. His book is called Writing with Ghosts, Angels, and the Spirits of the Dead. And welcome back. George Norrie with you. Back with psychic John Russell. He became aware of his psychic abilities when he was about 6 years old. He started giving psychic readings to his friends and families by the age of 15. By the age of 18, he was reading professionally. He eventually became internationally known, has more than 45 years expertise as a professional psychic with a worldwide clientele, and as a paranormal investigator has witnessed more than 800 supernatural manifestations. John, welcome to the program, and congrats on the book, Writing with Ghosts, Angels, and the Spirits of the Dead.
George, thank you so much. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me. I'm excited to be here, and thank you for the congratulations on the book. It's just out this month, and I'm really proud of it.
Good for you. Now, you're a motorcyclist, which has a lot to do with some of the things in the book.
Exactly right. Yeah, I've been a biker since I was the age of 15, and the reason that this the book came about was I had shot a pilot, a TV pilot for the History Channel.
Aha, okay, good people.
And yeah, really good people, and we had a great time doing that. I became friends with my producer, and we stayed friends, and we decided to continue to work on some projects together, trying to get another TV show done utilizing my psychic gifts. And we bandied about some ideas about, you know, what direction it should take and what we would do. Well, ever since I was a kid, a young man, there was a show on TV, and a lot of people will know this, a lot of people won't, but nearly every biker will. There was a show called Then Came Bronson, and it was about a guy in short that just, he gave up on the corporate world, threw everything he had on his motorcycle, and took off to discover America. And in the process, wherever he would go, he was a catalyst for change. He didn't change, but he brought change into other people's lives through the adventures that he had. And so I told my friend, my producer friend, I said, let's do a psychic version of this. Let's do a paranormal version of this. I'll come roaring into town on my motorcycle. We'll investigate whatever paranormal situation or story or whatever there is, bring it to a resolution, bring it to whatever conclusion we can, and then we'll go to the next town again on my bike. And so he loved the idea. I loved the idea. And we ran it up every flagpole there was. Nobody saluted. And in the process, he said, listen, why don't you put together some of these paranormal experiences you've had, just little short snippets of things, do a little blog, and we can use that as an additional promotional tool. And so I did. And about that time, the amount of paranormal experiences that I began to have riding my motorcycle became just surreal, just bizarre. I had never had paranormal experiences that were specific to my motorcycle rides. I have in every other aspect, and every other facet of my life, but not really my motorcycle. And all of a sudden, they begin to occur with the bike. And I put a few of them on the blog, and I began to look at these experiences I was having. And even though I've had over 800, some of these were just truly, truly extraordinary, just really bizarre. And I said, you know, I have got to take these. I've got to expand them. I've got to tell the entire story and collect these together. And so I did, and the book Writing with Ghosts, Angels, and the Spirits of the Dead was born.
Super. What kind of bike do you ride?
I ride a Honda. It's a VTX 1300C, and I've got almost 114,000 miles on this bike alone now.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of miles.
That's amazing. And you wear a helmet?
I do wear a helmet. I didn't when I was younger, depending upon the helmet laws. And
stay safe. We want to keep you around, John.
I appreciate that. But I do wear a full-face helmet now. When we very first moved to Florida, I wore what they call a turtle shell, a half helmet. And I was hitting the nose by a rock at 50 miles an hour. Had bugs flying to my eye. Had a lot of other things happen. I went to the bike shop, said, give me that full face right there, and I've done full face ever since.
Absolutely. I guess you're used to full face now with masks and everything else these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that
was much of a change for me.
Let's go back to the age of six. How did this start for you?
Well, it started, like I say, when I was about 6 years old. I woke up suddenly wide awake. It wasn't one of those situations where you're coming awake or where you're waking up slowly or a lingering dream state or anything. I was just suddenly completely wide awake. And I didn't know why, and I raised up on my elbows in my bed, and I looked around, and down the hallway from my bedroom, where there was a nightlight, and the glow of the nightlight, this old black man was standing there. And I can describe him. He had close-cropped white hair. He had on khaki pants, black shoes, a black dress belt, and a plaid shirt. And I looked at him, and I screamed bloody murder, because we're white folk. We didn't have nobody black living with us. And I presumed that an intruder had gotten into the home. And I screamed like crazy, and I heard my parents begin to come running. And as I screamed, the old black man standing there looked at me with this bemusement on his face. And I swear, just like the Cheshire Cat, he slowly began to vanish from his feet up till all that was left was his head.
I bet he was a spirit guide for you.
He was. He opened the doorway. He came to open the doorway to my psychic gift. And when my parents came in, I told them, I said, there's somebody in the house. And I said, no, there's nobody. I said, there's somebody in the house, even though I'd just seen him disappear. And I was so scared and so convincing that they checked under the beds, they checked in the closet, they checked the doors, they checked the windows. And, of course, nobody in flesh was there. But, yes, this man came to open the portal for me and to activate my psychic gift.
Did he come back again when the parents left?
I have never seen him again.
Just that one time?
Just that one time. And I was scared to death that he would come back that night when my parents went back to bed and I tried to go back to sleep. And I was like, why did he come? What did he want with me?
One eye open and everything else.
Yeah,
huh?
One eye open and everything else. And of all the experiences I've had, that's the only time that I've ever been scared. I've been startled since.
Well, heck, you were only 6 years old.
Yeah, yeah. And after that, after his visit, I began to be able to not only predict the future for people, but to actually see into their lives and what they had done. I remember this one story very shortly after the experience with him. These people pulled into our driveway. And I didn't know them. My parents did, but I didn't know them. And so I went inside, and I got my parents. I said, somebody in a car just pulled in our driveway, and they're getting out. And so they came out, and they were friends of my parents. And I said, oh, okay. So they came up, and we were all standing outside there, and I was goofing around. You know, I was a young kid, you know, 6, 7, whatever. And I'm standing there playing and kind of halfway eavesdropping. And so I looked at the people, and I said, you know, I said, you guys just went on vacation. And I said, you have kids. They're not with you now, but you have kids, and you took them on vacation. You have two kids, a boy and a girl. And I said, you went to this hotel.
And how old are you when you're telling them this, John?
I'm like 6 or 7.
Oh, geez.
And I said, you went to this hotel, and it was painted white, and it was two-story, and the windows were staggered like this. It looked like this. And there was this row of trees in front. And I said, you took that car right there on the trip. And as I'm telling them this, I'll never forget as long as I live. The woman in particular, her eyes got wider and wider and wider, and she looked at me.
And they're like, actually listening to you, right?
Yeah. And she's looking at me like I've got cobras growing out my ears or something. And she looked at my mother and my father, and she says, my God, how could he possibly know that? How does he know that? And my mother was, and my dad didn't know what to say, and he was kind of like, well, you know.
But they knew that you had these abilities, right?
Your parents. Yeah. And the people verified that what I'd seen was correct because they had just gone on that vacation. They were coming to tell my parents about it. And what I had seen was completely accurate. So that was the beginning of things.
When you were 15, did your parents kind of encourage you to do readings for people?
My mother did. My father did not. The paranormal spooked my father. He was kind of a quasi-closet believer, I guess, maybe. We had so many experiences around the house that could not be denied. And I mean, he experienced them, but his response was, don't talk about it, you know, go on and do something else. But my mother was very encouraging. And, you know, growing up in a household with that encouragement, it was just a totally normal thing to me. I mean, somebody appears in the living room and then vanishes, or the chairs rock by themselves, the rocking chairs, or doors open and close and there's no one there, no breeze, no draft. That was just everyday occurrence for me. That was totally normal for me.
Was there anyone else, John, in the family that had these abilities? I mean, was this genetic by any chance?
It is genetic, yeah. It does go back quite a ways in my family, but I have the strongest gift of anyone in my family, and I've had the most experiences of anyone in my family.
It's interesting that at six you got this gift, and you've perfected it ever since. And as we were saying, you've had it for about 45 years now, right?
Yeah, a long time, all my life, ever since the age of six. I'm 66 now, so been around the block a few times.
That's the new 45.
There you go. That's what I keep telling.
Just take care of yourself. That's the important thing.
I tell you.
What has been for you one of the most gratifying aspects of being psychic?
One of the most gratifying aspects is I've read for thousands and thousands of clients over the years, and to me the most gratifying aspect of it is when somebody comes to me. They want to hear the truth. They don't want their ears tickled. They want to be helped. And I can tell them something that's concrete, that provides some actual help for them, for their lives, gives them some direction, puts them into a better place in their lives, gives them some tools to work with to make their lives better. And they listen to it, and they do it, and they believe it, and they act on it, and their lives are improved as a result. And to me, that's the absolute best thing about it. Everything else is just a wonderful side effect. That's the best thing, is being able to help people.
Besides the six-year-old event, has there been any other scary events for you later on in life that you felt, oh my, how did I get into this?
No. I have had, like I say, I've had events where I've been startled. You know, you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that you're alone in the house and the doors and windows are locked, maybe the alarm's even on, and you turn around, there's somebody standing there in the flesh. That's a little startling. And then they disappear, and you go, okay, all right. But there was one other experience I did have, though. I won't describe it as fearful, but we were doing a paranormal investigation in upstate New York, and there was this particular horse barn, this very large horse barn, that was the site of a lot of manifestations. And we were there at night and going through there and using little small flashlights sometimes. And a lot of times I just wanted it to be dark and just whatever ambient light there was. And we received several manifestations. These were witnessed by multiple people. A lot of things that I picked up on, they were able to verify and so on and so forth. So it was really a good investigation. There was nothing untoward or out of the way, or certainly not to me, but, you know, I'm familiar with all these things and comfortable with all these things. But there was this one door that I went to, and I heard the urge to go into this door, to open this door and go into this room. And as I approached it, it was like ice cold, and every hair on my body stood up. And it took everything I had to open that door and go in. Like I say, I can't say I was fearful, but it was just the energy there was just so strong and so powerful that it took everything I had to open that doorknob and go through.
Has life ever been frustrating for you, John?
Oh, Lord, yes.
Because of this gift?
Yeah, it has. One of the most frustrating things for me is people not taking me seriously. I had a very dear friend that lost his business because of it, because I made a prediction for him, and I told him, you know, now's the time to get out of this thing and move on. You'll be okay. And he didn't listen to me, and he lost his business. And that really was frustrating and hurtful to me. So people not taking me seriously. And, of course, I understand, you know, there's a lot of people that use psychics. They have six psychics. You know, I had one lady tell me, I have a psychic for romance, I have a psychic for money, I have a psychic for travel. I was like, my God, no wonder you're confused and messed up. And I know there's a lot of phonies and frauds out there, and I get that, but people that know me know my track record. And they know that I have this accuracy, and they know that I have this proof. And to have them ignore that and then to see them get into peril because of it, that's very frustrating. Another thing is that a lot of times clients will misunderstand me. I was reading for one lady, and I said, boy, I see a lot of disharmony in your home. She goes, oh, no disharmony in my home. My house is spotless. But my husband sure has been a bear lately. So she couldn't relate the word disharmony.
Right.
You know.
And he, I assume, had passed on, right?
No, he was there.
He was still there. Okay.
He was being a bear. That was the source of the disharmony in the home. But talking about passing on, I read for another guy, and talk about frustrating. As soon as we started the reading, I said, I'm seeing this figure on the other side that I'm presuming is your son. Has your son passed recently? No. Okay, and so we kept going in the reading. I said, I keep getting this guy coming back, and he tells me he's your son. Your son's not dead? No. I said, okay, so about three or four more times during the reading, I kept mentioning this, and no. So we wrap up. We get to the end of the reading, and he says, I'm kind of disappointed. And I said, why? He says, I wished you'd have spent more time talking about my deceased son.
What?
Yeah, that's what I said.
He kept denying it and denying it?
He kept denying it the entire time, and I asked him point blank. I said, is your son on the other side? Is he dead?
Was he daydreaming or what?
I don't know what in the world was going on. That
I mean, did you tell him, sir, I've asked you six times about your dead son?
Yeah, and he was just kind of like, whatever. And I'm like,
my God, he was in the ozone layer.
I tell you, I was flabbergasted by that one. And then a really, really funny one, I had read for a friend of mine, and she brought her daughter to me. She said, God, this guy's just phenomenal. You got to go get a reading with this guy. And she said, do you care if I sit in with my daughter? Normally, I don't let family members sit in together. I read for just one person at a time.
Right, right, closet.
And this time, I was like, yeah, okay, whatever, sit in. And it's a good thing she did, because I was telling her daughter about this guy that she was in love with or whatever. And I was telling her one of the things about this guy. I said, what you have to understand about this guy, he is never, ever going to be a suit and tie guy. He could never work inside at a desk or anything like that. He has got to be outside. He's got to have something outdoors, something with movement and motion and action. And she looked at me and she shook her head and she goes, oh, no, you're so wrong. And then she says, this guy could never sit at a desk and wear a suit. He has to work outside and be. And we both sit there. Her mother and I both sit there with our eyes bugged out looking at her. And her mother says, that's what he just said. And she looked at me. She goes, oh, you did?
They don't listen, do they?
They don't listen. And then the other thing that's frustrating is when a person, I say, like, I'm seeing a person with a name like Chuck. And he wears a golfing hat. Nope, no one. You sure? Nope, nobody in my family like that. No? Okay. And either when they're pressed or later in the reading, oh, well, I have an Uncle Charles who loves to golf.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, Chuck, it's like, so you deal with those kinds of things. And it's frustrating, but you learn to handle it, and you learn to deal with it, and you go on.
Well, with John Russell, his book is called Writing with Ghosts, Angels, and the Spirits of the Dead. His website is writingwithghosts.net, which we have linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about what's it like writing with ghosts, angels, and the spirits of the dead. And we'll talk about one of his UFO encounters. And that encounter, John, really changed you, didn't it?
It did. It was absolutely, totally life-changing. For me, I had to change religion when I had that experience.
That's pretty dramatic. Let's talk about that when we come back in just a moment. And then we will take calls with him next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. So hang with us. We will be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, Lockwood. John Russell with us, his book, Riding with Ghosts, Angels, and the Spirits of the Dead. John, tell us about this UFO experience. What happened?
Oh, man, this was the experience that made me change my religion. I have to give you a little background story on this.
Okay.
I By the time this happened, I guess I was close to 20 years old, still a very young man. And I had had a ton of paranormal experiences by then. So I firmly believed and accepted lots of the supernatural manifestations that went on. And when I say I've had these things, these are things other people have actually witnessed on the physical plane. And I mean, in later years, we've recorded them, we've photographed them, we've recorded them on audio and video and things. So these are things that actually occur. Now, at that time, I did not believe in UFOs. Didn't believe in them.
At all.
I had had all these spiritual experiences, paranormal experiences, all these manifestations, all these physical happenings that were produced by beings on the other side, and did not believe in UFOs. I had read the literature, I had read the books, I had seen some of the interviews, and I said, nah, just nah. I just didn't believe in it. So I was living in my hometown of San Angelo, Texas, and we're right on the tip end, I think, of Tornado Alley. We have a lot of really bad, really severe weather there, and anybody that's ever been in a place that's prone to tornadoes knows you have all these bizarre weather manifestations that occur naturally because of the tornadic activity. So I was used to storms, and I was used to strange manifestations of the weather and things like that. But one day, I came out of this building, and I closed the door. Now, I wasn't on my motorcycle then. I had a car then, and it was parked in the parking lot across the street. It was only a two-lane street, and I could see the parking lot in my car from where I exited the building. And as I went out, the first thing that hits me in the face is this big blast of wind. I'm like, oh, we must be in for a thunderstorm or
sure.
a tornado watch or whatever like we normally are. And then I look across the street at my car, and down in the – and it's overcast already. There's a lot of clouds churning and everything overhead, but that's normal. But I look across the street into the parking lot at my car, and down in the parking lot, touching the parking lot by my car, is this cloud that's, I guess, kind of like a column connected to the clouds up above, and it's kind of – rolling and roiling and bubbling and churning, and I'm like, okay. So I'm thinking, well, maybe this is a tornado, or maybe it's a large dust devil or whatever. But then from within the cloud, these glowing orbs begin to emerge just to the surface of the cloud, and then they recede. And they're like red, and they're like orange, and they're like yellow, and they're like purple, and all this. And I'm like, okay, I've lost it. I've gone insane. Something snapped. I've had a stroke. I'm a young man. I'm healthy, but this is it. I've gone over the edge. Something's wrong. And I get this urge, this bizarre urge, to take a step towards the cloud. So I make a few steps forward, and George, here comes the cloud toward me.
Uh-oh.
I stop. I take a few steps back. The cloud recedes a few steps back. I walk a few steps forward, it comes forward, I go back, it goes back. So I'm still standing there by the door that I came out of, and it opens, and I get whacked with the door, and this buddy of mine comes out and goes, oh, geez, I'm sorry, so what are you doing standing close by the door? And before I answer, he looks up and says, oh, looks like we're in for a big storm, huh? And then he looks over in the parking lot and sees this thing, and he goes, what in the world is that? And I said, watch this. So he's seen it, so now I know I'm not crazy. And I said, watch this. And I walk toward the cloud, and it moves toward me. And I step back, and the cloud goes back. And I do that a few times. I said, isn't that the most bizarre thing you've ever seen? And he looks at me like I'm the most bizarre thing
you've
ever seen. And he says, bye, and runs down off towards his car, which is parked in another direction, leaving me here alone with this thing. So I'm like, okay, it's real. What do I do now? Well, about this time, oh, and the bizarre thing about this, all the debris and everything in the parking lot around this cloud, nothing is moving, nothing's stirring. You would think there would be like this wind that would be whipping everything around or whatever, but everything down around this cloud in the parking lot is perfectly still. So the cloud all of a sudden recedes back up into the clouds above, and they all start moving off in a kind of southerly direction. And I'm like, okay. So I run for my car. I get in. I was a smoker then. I lit a cigarette. I punched my button for my favorite radio station. I said aloud, what in the world was that? So I get out and I start driving. Now, in West Texas, it can rain. I mean, it can really come downpours.
Buckets.
Buckets. And that's an understatement. And so as I start to drive, here comes the rain. Well, the rain starts to come down in such intensity that I've got my headlights on, I've got the windshield wipers on high, and the rain becomes so heavy that I literally cannot see the car in front of me. And there are cars angle parked in parking spaces on the street, and I literally cannot see the rear ends of those cars that are angle parked out my passenger side window. That's how hard it's raining. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is what in the world am I going to do? I can't just stop because nobody will be able to see me. They'll hit me. Well, I get up on the bumper of this car in front of me before my headlights pick it up, and I jam on my brakes, and we're at a stoplight, and you can barely see the light glowing through the rain. I'm like, oh, man, this is really bad. This is really terrible. Well, I knew what street I was on, and I said, if I can turn here, there was a Sears Roebuck store there then, and down in the basement they had one of the best sporting goods selections on the planet, and I love sporting goods and fight the outdoorsman and things. So I said, if I can make that parking lot, I'll jump out, get soaked, but I'll go in and I'll go down, look at the sporting goods until the storm passes, and then I'll drive home when it's safe to drive. So I'm creeping around the corner and I'm staying on the front bumper of this car as best as I can see it with my headlights on. And I'm still trying to look to make sure I don't sideswipe the cars that are angle parked. And it's getting worse. And I lean over in my car, holding onto the wheel. I lean toward the passenger side window to try and get just a glimpse of the cars that are angle parked there so I don't sideswipe something. And this is important. You got to get this. As I'm leaned over like that, it's raining that heavily. And 1 second later, literally, it's not. Now, I don't mean it slacks off. I don't mean it eases up. I mean, 1 second, I cannot see outside the passenger window of my car to see the cars that are angle parked on the street. And 1 second later, there's not a bit of moisture anywhere.
Nothing. Just stopped. Just
stopped
like
completely. There's not even any mist on the windshield. And I'm like, what in the world? And perfect visibility's return. I mean, of course, it's still cloudy and overcast, still gloomy, you know, the clouds are overhead. But there's not a mist on the windshield. There's not a drop falling. I can see behind me in the rearview mirror. I can see the street in front of me perfectly. And I'm like, what in the world? So about this time, in the oncoming traffic lane, cars start swerving over into our lane and almost hitting other cars, and people are blowing their horns. And people are coming to a stop.
No, they were blinded by the rain, weren't they?
Well, no, it's not raining now.
At that point, okay.
At that point, it stopped. It's completely, totally stopped. And so people are jumping out of their cars. They're rolling down their windows and pointing, and people are opening their cars and looking up and pointing. And I'm like, what in the world? Everybody's gone nuts. So
everybody's seeing it now.
Everybody's seeing this, and I haven't. And I look over toward the Sears building where they're pointing. And my first thought is that the rain has stopped so bizarrely and so quickly like this because here's an F5 and it's coming to kill us all, and that's what they've seen. I'm like, oh, God, I'm too young to die. Come on. And I look over at the Sears building, and hovering right over the back of the Sears building, maybe 50 feet above it, if that far, is this shiny metallic disc, maybe 30, 50 feet in diameter. Sitting there silently hovering right over the Sears building, and that's what everybody was jumping out and yelling and honking and pointing at.
Have you ever had an experience like that again, John?
Well, not that close, but I have had another one, and it's in the book. It's a follow-up to this one, and I did a cartoon eye rub. I literally did a cartoon eye rub. I couldn't believe my eyes, and I look back up, and it's still there. And it moves very, very, very slowly toward us, toward the street, the UFO does. And these clouds come from behind, cover up the UFO, and 1 second later, the rain is back as strong as it was before.
Bizarre.
So I follow this guy into the parking lot. He's turning into the parking lot, and we can't just sit there. I mean, we're going to get creamed or whatever, right. So everybody starts moving the best they can. And I said, if I hit this guy's car, I don't care. I'm following him to the parking lot. I'm going to get out. I'm going to ask him to confirm what I just saw, even though I saw all these other people see it. I'm like, no, I still got to have this.
Make sure you're not going nuts, huh?
Got to make sure I'm not going nuts. I didn't believe in UFOs. So he goes into the Sears parking lot. I see his dome light come on. I park right next to him. I jump out, and the rain is pelting me so hard it hurts. I'm literally soaked to the bone the second I jump out. But I'm young and fleet of foot, so I run and follow this guy. And the Sears building had a vestibule inside and then stairs that led down into the basement and through a set of doors went into the rest of the store. And the guy standing there in the vestibule, dripping in water, I remember he wore glasses. He hadn't even wiped his glasses off. They were all beaded with rainwater. And he's just hanging his head down, just staring at the floor. And I come in, and I get around in front of him, and I'm standing there, and he looks up and realizes I'm there. And I said, did you see what I just saw? And he said, yeah, but I darn sure ain't going to tell nobody. And he sidesteps me, and he goes on into the store. You know, back then it was even worse than it is now. You tell somebody you saw a UFO, they thought you're touched in the head, you know.
That's right.
So, but he did confirm that, yes, there it was. And so I had to switch religions at that point. I had to say, okay, there it is, and don't know what it is or why it is or what, but there it is, and it's real. And since then, I've had probably, close to 6, 7, 8 more experiences, none that close up.
Do you think they are responsible for your psychic abilities?
I don't think so. I think it's just... I think it's just something that I'm gifted with.
Maybe you're like a magnet now or something.
And I am a magnet for these things. I attract these things. And that's why I tell people that, you know, if you want to be friends with me, you're going to have some weird experiences. And everybody laughs, yeah, okay, sure, whatever. Or they say, oh, I'm a believer, that's okay. And then these things start happening, and people sometimes literally have ran from my presence.
The name of the book, Riding with Ghosts, Angels, and the Spirits of the Dead. He gets on his motorcycle, and where do you go, John?
Oh, man, I have ridden all over the state of Florida. I've ridden over a lot of the state of Georgia, and a lot of these experiences. I love to hike. I've been an outdoorsman all my life. I love the woods. I love the isolation. I like connecting with the spirits there that I find, and a lot of these stories have taken places in the woods, in the state parks here, in the forest, but one actually took place in an automobile museum.
What happened there?
Well, that's the opening chapter of my book.
I just don't want to give away the ending, that's all.
Yeah, well, we won't give away too much, but we can talk about this. And I had done oh, geez, all of a sudden my Alexa's going off reading a story. So
it heard you talking.
I guess so, but anyways.
Or they're listening to you, John.
Yeah, that's it. So I had shot this TV pilot, I mentioned that, for the History Channel, and it was investigating the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, and we had had a phenomenal experience with the entire shoot. Everybody on the crew had become believers, and I had developed this absolute obsession while we were there to find out what had happened to Lincoln's funeral hearse. And I asked my producer, and he didn't know, and I think I asked some other people, and they didn't know, and it just became an absolute obsession with me.
And obviously it was a horse buggy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I couldn't figure out why this was such an obsession, but I had really wanted to find the funeral hearse that carried Lincoln's body, and I couldn't. So we wrapped up the filming, and then years later, my wife and I moved to Florida and got my new motorcycle. And I had this absolutely overwhelming urge to ride to our state capital here, Tallahassee, and I couldn't figure out why. And it just kept growing and kept growing and kept growing. So I was reading full-time then. I'm mostly retired from the readings now, but I was reading full-time then. So I scheduled myself a day off and packed up the bike. And I said, okay, I'm going to Tallahassee. We'll see what this is all about. So I won't spoil the whole chapter because there's a lot more to it, but and the readers can enjoy that in the book. It's the first chapter in the book. But as I'm on the road to Tallahassee, I see the sign for the Tallahassee Automobile Museum. And I have this overwhelming urge to stop. And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. So I pull in to the parking lot, and I get some omens there of some things that are going on. The readers will check that out in the book. And I walk in. And as I'm walking across the parking lot to go in, all of a sudden the overwhelming memories of shooting the TV pilot in New York come back to me. And I'm like, wow, this is strange. What's going on here? So I go inside, and I'm looking around, and I spot it across the room, and I know immediately what it is before I even go and read about it. And I realize that's why the other side has led me here. It's Lincoln's funeral hearse.
Wow.
It's the hearse.
And there are no coincidences.
Exactly, exactly. There's a lot of connection with the other side that if we will pay attention to it, if we will be receptive to it. I always tell my clients, I said, please don't count things as coincidences, because that tends to shut down the receptivity to the other side and to the communication that they want to have with us, the help they want to give us, the protection they want to give us. And yes, I have had many life-saving experiences where the other side has literally saved my life many times, including on the bike, and you'll read about that in the book. There's an instance of that there. But we have to be receptive. We have to be open. We have to be understanding. We have to use our common sense, because, like I said, there's a lot of fraud and phonies out there. But amongst all that, you can find the real thing. You can find the real deal. And you can find some of the help that you need, some of the things that you need for your life. And as I say in my book, you know, look, the other side is not sitting there wagging its tail like a puppy, waiting for us to say what we want. It'd be great if it was, but life doesn't work that way.
That's right. Well, they're out there. John, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you next. You can have questions for John Russell about ghosts, angels, the spirits. But if you have anything personal you want to ask him, just ask the question. You don't need your birth date or anything like that.